Chapter 2. The Consultation. Ian Ventham parks his Range Rover in the disabled space, not because he has a problem walking, but because it is close to the door. Then he walks through Waitrose Supermarket to the cafe, where Bogdan is waiting for him. For a few minutes, they argue about payment for a swimming pool that Bogdan has recently tiled. They had agreed $4,000 for the work, but now Ian only wants to pay $2,000. Finally, Bogdan, tiring of Ventham's arguments, says he will accept $3,000. Ian hands the money over.
"It's actually $2,800, he says. "But that's close enough for friends. Now, I wanted to ask you about something."
"Sure," says Bogdan, putting the money in his pocket.
"You seem like an intelligent man."
Bogdan smiles and shakes his head.
"Well, I speak very good Polish. My English, not perfect, though."
"When I ask you to do a job, it gets done well and cheaply," says Ventham. "I'm on my way to fire Tony Curran, and I need someone to take his place. Would you like that?"
For the next few minutes, Bogdan listens to Ventham's idea. After he's finished, the Pole smiles.
"Too much for you?" asks Ventham.
"No, I can do the job, but if you fire Tony, maybe he kills you."
Ian finishes his tea.
"I know, but let me worry about that. And tomorrow, the job's all yours."
"Sure, if you're alive," replies Bogdan. Ron Ritchie, as usual, is having none of it. He is standing up and pointing at a document. His finger is shaking, but his voice is still strong, and he feels pleased to have something to be angry about again. Back in the old days, they used to call him Red Ron. He had organised hundreds of trade union walkouts in companies and at factories and shipping ports. Anyone who had ever needed to be defended was always safe in Ron's tattooed arms.
"Now, here's a sentence, and it's in your words, Mr. Ventham, not mine," he continues. "Coopers Chase Holding Investments has the right to develop further in consultation with the residents."
"But this is a consultation meeting," says Ian Ventham, as if talking to a child. "You're the residents. You can consult as much as you like for the next 20 minutes.
Ian sits at a table in front of the residents. His skin is brown from the sun, and his sunglasses are pushed up over his hair. He wears an expensive shirt and a watch as big as a clock. On one side of him sits a young woman, the development architect, and on the other, a man with lots of tattoos. Ron thinks it must be Tony Curran, Ventham's builder, who he has heard about.
"You're calling it the Woodlands," says Ron, "when you're planning to cut down all the trees. You have your nice computer pictures, but what we want to see is a proper model, with trees and little people."
Everyone claps. A lot of people wanted to see a model, but Ventham said it was not done these days.
"You know where you can put this document, don't you?"
Ron shouts at Ventham, feeling happy. He is back in the fight, and there is nothing like it. As Father Matthew Mackey enters the back of the residence lounge, a large man in a football shirt is shouting. There are many people here, as Mackey had hoped. He takes a biscuit and sits in the back row. The man in the football shirt has sat down now, and other people are speaking. Father Mackey pushes his hand through his snowy white hair. How strange it is to be in this room. He shivers. It's probably just the cold. The consultation is over. Ron is sitting with Joyce in the garden of Cooper's Chase, drinking cold beers in the sunshine. His son Jason, who has come to visit, is sitting with them. Jason used to be a successful boxer, but he's a television celebrity now. Joyce said she saw you on a cooking program last week, says Ron. Are you really doing celebrity ice dance as well?
I thought it might be fun, says Jason.
Ron drinks a mouthful of his beer, then looks over Jason's shoulder.
Over by the BMW, Jason. That's Ventham.
Jason slowly turns his head.
And that's Curran talking to him, adds his father. Have you ever seen him in town? Once or twice, says Jason.
The conversation between Ventham and Curran does not look happy. They move their hands angrily, and they speak fast and low.
Looks like they're arguing, says Ron.
Jason drinks some of his beer and watches the men carefully.
Want a game of cards this afternoon? His father asks.
Sorry, Dad, but I've got something to do this afternoon.
Jason leaves, and Ron watches him a little worriedly. There is something not right with his son today. Ian Ventham is happy about the consultation. He was not worried about the loud man with the tattoos or the priest. That priest must be worried about the cemetery, thinks Ian. Well, let him try and stop me. Ian is already thinking ahead. After the Woodlands, there will be a final stage to the development, Hillcrest. He has driven the 5 minutes up a rough track from Cooper's Chase and is now sitting in Karen Playfair's kitchen. Her father, Gordon, owns the land at the top of the hill, and he does not want to sell. It does not worry Ventham, who has his ways.
I'm afraid nothing has changed, says Karen. Dad won't sell, and I can't make him.
I understand, says Ventham. More money.
No, and I think you know this already. He just doesn't like you.
Gordon Playfair had taken one look at Ian Ventham and disappeared upstairs. Ian knows that sometimes people did not like him, but he has learned to live with it. It was their problem.
But leave it with me, says Karen. I'll find a way.
Karen Playfair understands Ian Ventham. He has been explaining to her how much money she could make if she could get her father to sell. As Ventham stares at her in her big jumper, he wonders when she gave up on life. Ventham is on lots of dating apps and keeps a top age of 25 for the women he wants to date. Karen must be 50, the same age as him.
It's different for a woman, though, he thinks.
But if he has to be nice to a 50-year-old woman for a few weeks, then he can do it. As he shakes her hand and leaves, he realizes that the only woman over 25 that he spends any time at all with is his wife. Oh well, he thinks. Time to go, things to do. Tony Curran makes his decision as he stops his BMW in front of his house. He is going to kill Ian Ventham with a gun he keeps under a tree in his garden. If he can remember which tree. There is only so much any man can take. Curran begins to sing to himself as he goes into the huge house he bought 18 months ago with the money he has made from Cooper's Chase. He switches off the expensive alarm that Ventham had some men put in last week, Polish guys, but then everyone in the UK was Polish these days. Curran's wife is not back yet, but that's fine. He needs time to think and plan. Slowly, he goes back over the argument with Ventham he'd had earlier that afternoon. Ventham had fired him, and it was so quickly done, just a conversation on the way back to his car. He had wanted to hit Ventham, but he knew better. He kept the argument small and quiet, so that when Ventham is found dead, no one can say they saw him and Tony Curran shouting at each other. Curran sits down at the kitchen table. Nothing needed to be done tonight. Let the world continue, keep the birds singing in the garden, and then do it. Why did anyone cause trouble for Tony Curran? When had that ever gone well for them? Tony hears the noise a second too late. He turns to see the huge spanner as it comes towards him. In the short second he has before he dies, he understands. You can't always win, Tony. That's only fair. The spanner hits him above the eye and he falls to the floor. The birds in the garden stop singing for a second and then continue. The killer puts a photograph on the table as Tony Curran's fresh blood makes a wide pool around his head.